truth, reconciliation, trust. These are the three main qualities that Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC, should have lived up to. But according to Audrey Redman, the TRC fell short of these expectations. Audrey is a Dakota Cree who is a former host of Honor the Earth on CKLN Community Radio in Toronto. And most importantly, she is an Indian Residential School survivor at the St. Paul's Indian Residential School in LeBret, Saskatchewan, where she attended between 1957 and 1964. My name is Emma Nordunkian, and for the next 25 minutes, you'll be hearing Audrey speak about the genocidal suffering that she and First Nations peoples experienced and continue to endure at the hands of the Canadian government. You'll also be hearing about her take on alternative healing processes to the TRC. It's dark, it's powerful, it's cathartic. This is Audrey's story. I was actually wondering first, is there a word for cultural genocide or just genocide in general in Cree?
I don't know. I was brought up with my mother's side, Dakota. I was brought up on Standing Buffalo Reserve, the Qu'Appelle Valley. And I went into the Indian Residential School at six, just turned six. From that time on, we weren't allowed to speak our languages. We weren't even allowed to speak. We had no connection for 10 months of the year to our families and only went home in the summers, and maybe we could get away in the middle of the winter for a week or two, but that was it. So for me, I lost connection. My sisters, there's 11 in our family, and only the older three knew the language. And the rest of us were all taken away from my mother and father when I was five, just before I went into residential school. And I lost four of the young ones, just younger than me. They came and scooped them. And one of my brothers, he's 61, he's just younger than me. And he just died from a massive heart attack just on Mother's Day, this last Mother's Day. And that brought up a lot for me because I realized that, you know, we had been separated. And even though I met him 40 years later and, you know, we connected like brother and sister, like we had never been parted, never spent that time together. And so that's, I think, as a survivor in this country, as a First Nations in this country, it's very painful because that's something that we were prevented from having. We were prevented from having our families. And now in Canada, that's the pride of Canada, how they can invite people from all over the world and invite their families here to live here, enjoy that life, a life that we were prevented from having. And we don't have. And now we are looked at, you know, when our people are seen on the street without anyone, and they have taken to drinking or they've taken to something that's destroying them, you know, Canadians can look at them and say, you know what, they're destroying themselves because of that pain. They're not destroying you, but you've destroyed them. And I think that's what Canadians need to realize.
Despite not knowing the term in Dakota Cree, genocide, why and how to you is it important to use the term cultural genocide or even genocide when referring to the atrocities of the Indian residential school system? And can all these atrocities be encompassed into this single term?
I've been looking up, you know, what that term means. And I would say that First Nations people in Canada and the U.S. of A. have been undergoing a cultural genocide since the first people that came from across the ocean from the Europe, from French, from the English, from all those who followed, who agreed to kill the first people of this land in order to gain for themselves. That is a cultural genocide. And to do it in such a way, in such a devious way, as to set up their own law, which they have no right to do on this land, but took that right, as they have taken the right from where they came, because that's how they conducted themselves on their own lands, and that's how they took over other people's lands. So they came here and they did the same thing to the people here and killed indiscriminately. At one time, there was 10 million first people on this land, just like there were millions and millions of buffalo. So as we can see how things are appropriated and how they're desecrated is through, this lawyer says, Raphael Lemkin, a coordinated strategy. And I think that's what Canadian people need to look at, because Canadians are part of this coordinated effort.
Is it important for you to use that term to describe what occurred to you during the Indian residential school system era and even today?
Yes, I do. I think it's important to use the term. We're talking about intention. It was an intention, a deliberate intention, and continues to be a deliberate intention. So to me, until you correct that deliberate intention, we are going to have the continued problems, not just with Native people and Canadians. We're going to have it with Muslims. We're going to have it with Black people. We're going to have it with every targeted group across this country.
You said you feel as though it's persisting today. How do you believe the genocide against First Nations peoples in Canada is persisting today exactly?
Well, I think it runs right through. It's from, we have what's called an Indian Act, which is an illegal act, because that Indian Act was placed there as a bureaucracy. We don't live like those people who have all the jobs in Indian Affairs, all those consultants, you know, all those bureaucrats. We don't go into those fine dining rooms. We don't get to travel for free. We hardly have enough money to take a bus, let alone travel, you know, across the country to visit our families. And that's the truth. And how many have been killed trying to do that on along the roads, trying to hitchhike home? You know, who's talking about that? How many are being killed out there? How many men and women missing and murdered? And my sister was one of them who was murdered on Vancouver's east side, and she was a survivor. Canadians need to ask a lot of questions about, you know, we talk about accountability and transparency. Well, you know, those are easy concepts to talk about and brush over. Well, you know, it takes a whole lot more to take a look and start peeling back the layers and figure out, you know, who needs to be transparent here. So I would say that this is a cultural genocide. You know, those schools, we suffered a lot of punishment in those schools, all kinds of punishment. Our people are suffering punishment inside of prisons. That's another way that our people are dying and, you know, funding the prison systems, you know, funding the court systems. You know, now we're funding the mental health systems. You're taking all those, you know, pharmaceutical drugs into our communities. You know, so that's another way to weaken the people. So, yeah, this is a genocide, and it is systemic, and it is continuing. And, yes, they are still going after our children, our grandchildren. I know families now who are suffering through that, who are, the CAS is just waiting for them, just watching them, threatening them. Our people are under duress, as if we haven't gone through enough. You know, we have been victims of a terrorism in this country that people don't know about. So, you know, for people out there to, you know, Canadians to start screaming about terrorism, look at terrorism in your own backyard before you start screaming terrorism about somewhere else. You know, because that's what we've experienced in this country and continue to experience it. We're under threat. Our young men are under threat. Our women are under threat. Our children are under threat. And we will all stand up, continue to stand up for this land where we were born, where our ancestors came from. And that we are not going to give up. And we are not going to give it up, just like the Muslims will not give up their religion or the Jews will not give up theirs. Canada, you know, the British, the French, they might give up theirs. And they have, because they've given up prayers in their own courts. As soon as you see them do that, you better watch out, you know, about what the moral compass is in this country. If there's no more prayer there, then, you know, if there's no prayer there, then you haven't got a hope in hell.
One of the proposals, just to bring it to the topic of the TRC's report, one of the proposals of the recently released TRC report is to add First Nations cultural beliefs and the occurrence of cultural genocide in the educational curriculum of each province in Canada. And given that the main purpose of the Indian residential school system was to essentially shake the Indian out of the child, quote unquote, what do you believe is the significance of these recommendations? Are you satisfied with them as a residential school survivor?
Well, I would first say, take a look at the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions itself. I would say, go into those commissions, and I would speak to the commissioners, because there are people in there who have been brought in there who have been silenced about this commission. And I would look at what this commission was meant for. Because as far as I understand, under the Copyright Act, any information that is brought to any federal department is then owned by the Crown for 50 years. So they could do what they like with it. So I would question that first. So that to me proves the validity of that Royal Commission. I mean, that on the Truth and Reconciliation and on the Royal Commission, I mean, if we're going to go there. Another thing I would ask is, who is asking anything about those of us who opted out? Because I did it, a group of students from Ryerson University in 2007 did a documentary and followed some of us survivors to see what we were going to do about the Indian residential school settlement. And they followed me to Ottawa to deliver my opt-out statement. I wouldn't go through their legal process. I didn't agree with it, and I wouldn't go through it. So I wrote them out the reasons for opting out of the Government of Canada's residential school settlement, and I wrote conflict of interest on the part of Canada. Canada, in the case of residential school survivors, is the abuser. As a residential school survivor, I have been severely traumatized by residential school and Canada's institutions. Therefore, I don't believe the Government of Canada has the right to make decisions on behalf of residential school survivors. Number two, this settlement does not adequately meet even the basic needs of the survivor, nor does it represent the loss of culture. Number three, this settlement does not provide the survivor adequate compensation, which is the same we were suffering through, and we still are. Settlement does not guarantee residential school survivors will not have to fight for another 10 years for psychological and physical abuse claims to be recognized. And under those claims, the survivor were assessed through the ADR, were given points. I have a head injury from that school, falling off a ladder when I was cleaning the ceilings when I was 10 years old. And I had a fracture to my head, and I lost my eyesight at that time, and I had confused speech, and I had effects ever since. And the point system that they had me on was I would receive $10,000 compensation. And that was it. So this settlement does not consider the pain and loss of our children. Settlement does not compensate for the loss of home and land, because many of us are still wandering around here. In fact, I'm right in the process of trying to find another home. And many times, a lot of it is I'm rejected because I'm Native. I'm stereotyped immediately. I have no home. I can't afford to buy a home. I can hardly afford to rent a home on our land. This settlement does not provide the resources for healing. And healing is going to be a lifetime. I've deliberately stayed away from any of the healing. In fact, I was sent a letter by Crawford, the government's law firm. I received it on August 24th, 2008. It was, 2008. It was 4 days after the opt-out date, and it was on my birthday. In the letter, it said that my children and I would not be eligible for any residential school funding of any sort or from the Healing Foundation. So, you know, I've had to do my own healing, and it's been fine. I wanted it that way, because I didn't feel that the government had anything to give me in terms of healing, because they caused it. So I'm not going back to whoever it is that caused something. That would be insanity. So I am provided with my own healing, because as First Nations people, we mm-hmm. are different than Canadians. Canadians have the rule of law. First Nations people, we still believe, you know, that we have the natural law. We are the natural law. We live the natural law as best we can. And that's why we get in trouble all the time for breaking the law. And that's what I think Harper is afraid of when he says, you know, First Nations do have power. Yes, we do have power. We have our sovereignty. And Canadians have to recognize that. We do have our own law. And that was written in the treaties, that we would be able to live according to our own ways for as long as the sun shines and the grass grows green and the rivers flow. So they're flowing all around Ottawa, no matter how many dams you put up, you know, and the grass is still green and, you know, like we're still living that natural life.
Now that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission came to an end, is this the closing chapter for the Indian Residential School atrocities, and can more be done to mourn and honor the victims of these atrocities?
This is not the ending. This is not the closing of anything. This is the opening of something. When they first started this process, they said they were opening a can of worms. Well, you know something? You've got one huge, big can of worms now. But if Canadians think that if their whole family had been destroyed, that they're going to turn around and say this is the end of something? Well, think about that. If you lost your language, you lost your family, you lost everything that means anything to a human being, now would that be the ending? I think it's time for healing is what I think it is, and not based on what has been put out in terms of another, you know, another program, another system, another this and that. No, my healing comes from the people that I meet, the Canadians I meet. I meet, and I have Canadians who support me. I have, an older gentleman. I mean, you know, I'm a writer. I live on $600 a month. You know, I sometimes don't make it. And I have kind people like a Mr. Bob Staveley from the Unitarian Church, you know, and Francis Deverell, who will stop in on me and will help me. They're just kind people. So to me, when people recognize where there's a need, and that's not just survivors either, it's for people on the street that you meet. Don't look down on those forgotten people. They're there for a reason. Canadians have to change, and you've got to go back to thinking with your heart. You know, you can be policied right out of your own humanity.
If you believe that this is the way of healing, do you believe that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was satisfying? Do you believe that it did its job?
I really feel it's closed up to, it's a commission that was calculated, you know, to be that way. Only way that they're going to, you know, have truth is if they let that all out. Let it out. You know, don't try to control the stories of the people that they gave those stories to you. Don't say this one can be heard and this one can't. That's not your stories. That's not what it was about. That's not why survivors gave up their stories. What, so that they can be legally binding, so that they can't tell them anywhere? Because that's what it is. They tied up their stories in that commission so that they can't tell them anywhere. Now it's a legally binding, you know, they'll be sued. So everything has to be taken a look at, you know, like you can't just let this go. Because that's what, you know, if Canadians can let that go for us, you might as well just let go of all your own morals, all your own standards of what being a human being is and why you came here. Because why this whole thing started in this country and why Canadians are here in the first place is because our people didn't kill all of the people who came here, because they could have done it, slaughter them all as they came. But that was not in the heart of our people. Our people welcomed them, saved them, fed them, you know, and this is what they've done. Well, this is what Canada better start taking a look at. and that's to change the moral compass of this country, to make it what it says it is.
How do you believe Canada could do that?
I believe it can come through the people. I really believe people from the top, like, I don't think we need to have a top-down. That's the big problem. So, you know, take a look at what's going on here. Take a look at the system that you're a part of. And how do we want to change this? How do we want to bring it back to what is human? How do we bring it back so that, you know, there's enough here. There's more than enough here. And there's more than enough people here who want to do the right thing, who want to make the right decisions for everyone, for the earth, so that we can all have a sustainable environment to live in for the children, for the next generations coming. Because I don't want what I went through. I don't want that for the next generation. I want my ancestors, the generations to come, I want them to be able to stand up and just be able to stand and be happy. Be happy. That's what we're here for. We're not here to fight. You know, we're not here to destroy. And it's the only way we're going to do it. And I really believe our people have not lost our rudder. We are still in our own canoe.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't discussed?
Yeah, I really feel that our leadership as First Nations people, the Assembly of First Nations, really need to get to what the issues are here for Native people and stop, you know, shaking hands and making deals on our behalf, you know, and leading us down another dead-end road like they just did. You know, we need to have our people speak up in terms of what we want, not just them speaking for us, just like, you know, Parliament Hill speaks for Canadians. Well, it's not a Harper government. It's a people's government. And people better realize that. You know, and we're First Nations people. Yeah, there may be a national chief, you know, but he's not the queen. So we all need to get back to, you know, where we are as, you know, as citizens of this country, no matter who we are, and take responsibility. We got to change up the whole damn deal from the top down, and we got to make this a circle again. We got to make this a circle of communities again, because we have enough people in this country who are right and who want to do things right for everyone, for their own families. Because if we do things right for our own families around us in our communities, and that means right, and we can be an example to the rest of the world if we do it right. But that's the secret. We have to do it right.
Audrey, you really have a fine soul. Thank you so much for this interview, and I hope that we didn't open up too many wounds with the interview, and I hope that it brought a bit of healing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much, too, because I think every time we talk about this in the way, I think we do bring healing, and the kind of healing that we need. So thank you so much, Emma. I appreciate it so much.